Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world. The gigantic dam of the Russian army, which so far has so successfully held back the onrushing flood of the German army, has today sprung a new leak in what may be a dangerous place. Apparently still balked in their frontal attacks on Russia's three biggest cities, the Nazis have now thrown their greatest force into a sudden wheel southward. A hard-hitting German armored unit, Berlin claims, has tonight reached a Ukraine railroad terminal town called Uman, and in doing so has caused 200,000 new Russian casualties. This push to Uman, if true, is a line gain for the Germans of almost 100 miles, and the advancing column is now only some 130 miles from the Black Sea coast, which is the direction in which it is now obviously heading. Big Russian forces still exist, though, on both sides of the new Nazi advance, so it is again a question of whether the defenders or the stretched-out attackers are in the greater danger. Berlin was bombed again last night, but this time, to the Nazis' peculiar indignation, by Russian and not by British planes. And now, before we hear members of our staff reporting from the European capitals where they are stationed, here is a brief message from our sponsors.
How have you been these warm August days? Do you feel in tip-top shape all the time, or does a throbbing, sickish headache sometimes threaten to get you down? Well, don't blame the weather. The chances are you ate too fast or something disagreed with you. So the thing to do is get out that good old trusty blue and white package of Alka-Seltzer tablets and help yourself to quick, welcome relief. Alka-Seltzer is just the thing because it can help you in two ways. First, its pain-relieving analgesic offers prompt relief for your aching head. And second, its alkalizing properties soothe and settle that sickish feeling by neutralizing and reducing excess stomach acid. Try Alka-Seltzer. It's the pleasant way to relief for unpleasant ailments. Get it at any drugstore. And now, the news of the world.
First, we begin our series of direct news talks from abroad with a broadcast from Ankara, Turkey.
Hello, NBC. This is Martin Nagroski calling from Ankara, Turkey. I am now informed by a completely reliable diplomatic source that one of the directors of the German Secret Service, accompanied by one of the highest-ranking officers in the German military intelligence, were, under assumed names, on board the special German diplomatic courier plane which arrived at Istanbul last Tuesday night from Berlin. The two German officers, according to my information, are en route to Tehran, the Iranian capital, which is today the focal point of a grim undercover struggle for diplomatic supremacy between Germany on one side and England and Russia on the other. It's expected they will try to organize Nazi agents and fifth columnists in Iran. Till today, the identity of the two men had been a closely guarded secret, with the German embassy insisting that they were unimportant diplomatic clerks. It was remarked, however, that the men were immediately whisked away from the Istanbul airport in an embassy car, which carried them directly to the secluded summer villa on the Bosphorus of Germany's ambassador, Franz von Papen. For the past 3 days, the two men have been in constant conversation with von Papen, who is Germany's best-informed diplomat on the ins and outs of the intrigue-ridden states of the Middle East. Curiously enough, the Axis Whispering campaign in Turkey, aimed at rousing opposition to any Anglo-Russian action in Iran, has hit a new crescendo simultaneously with the arrival of the two German officers. Also, once more, German propagandists are busy handing out the line that once the Soviets are defeated, the Russian oil fields at Batum and Baku and the Russian territories of Georgia and Azerbaijan might fall to the lot of a Turkey that had proved its friendship for the Germans. The indications are growing that this part of the world may soon be approaching crisis time. That's all the news from Turkey. This is Martin Nagroski returning in out of the National Broadcasting Company.
That report was from a neutral capital. Next, we will have reports from two warring nations. And for the first of them, we switch now to London.
This is London. Saturday morning, about 19 minutes past one. So far, there are no reports of daylight cross-channel sweeps today by the RAF. Details of last night's operations over Germany, however, say that factories in the Ruhr and West Germany were heavily attacked. Bad weather over the North Sea gave way to moonlight when the British bombers were over Essen. Returning pilots reported that objectives were clearly visible and direct hits on armament plants were seen. Much-bombed Ham, with its railway yards, was attacked, as well as Dortmund. Late tonight came the report that Russian bombers, the heavy four-engine type called TB, made a surprise raid over Berlin. That was last night. Three squadrons of them are said to have come in from the north and plastered factories and electrical installations in suburbs of the capital. These TBs are said to be the same type of Soviet plane which flew from Moscow to California over the North Pole before the war. But there seems to be a mystery as to who really did carry out this surprise raid last night. One of the first jobs which Brendan Bracken said he would do on becoming Minister of Information was to arrange for direct reception here of pictures radioed from Russia. He's been as good as his word. This evening's papers carried pictures from Russia, the first to be radioed direct to London. Russia, by the way, has been getting everybody on edge with their propaganda. And there's a sense of humor about it. For instance, they said last night, "Much Ado About Nothing, an opera in four special announcements from the German High Command, music by the German Propaganda Ministry." It's in this vein that they are broadcasting to German listeners their replies to German broadcasts. We return you now to New York.
Next, for the story of the war, as is told to our American reporter in Germany, we take you across the battle lines inside Hitler's Reich to Berlin.
Yes, in Berlin, in a special war bulletin late tonight, the German High Command announced the first major German success in the Ukraine. The Germans say they have destroyed the 6th and 12th Soviet armies and part of the 18th Army. Altogether, this force consisted of 25 divisions of infantry, tank, and mountain troops. 103,000 prisoners are reported so far, and the Red casualty list tops the 200,000 mark. The Germans put the booty figure high and list 858 heavy guns, 317 tanks, and 5,250 motor vehicles as part of the war equipment seized. They say the trains fully loaded with supplies and munitions were grabbed. On the face of it, this would appear to be a knockout blow for the Russians in the Ukraine. It's assumed here that the Russian armies that were wiped out were in the area around Yumen, as the High Command today announced the capture of 30,000 men and the commander-in-chief of the 6th Soviet Army in that district. The German army is credited to... The German victory is credited to infantry and panzer divisions under the command of General Field Marshal von Rundstedt. The German Air Force is praised for the support which it gave the ground troops. News from other parts of the front is spotty, but in general, the reports here give the impression that the German armies are making progress almost everywhere. Tonight, the Germans released a few details on the bombardment of Alexandria, announced today by the High Command. According to these reports, the floating dock was hit by several bombs of the heaviest caliber, and the Germans state that if it wasn't completely destroyed, it certainly won't be usable for some time. The Germans claim a direct hit on a destroyer at anchor in the harbor. Smoke prevented the attacking airmen from seeing the actual sinking of the destroyer, but the Germans declare it can be safely assumed that it went down. And that's all tonight.
Many centuries ago, the Japanese began their march toward civilization by borrowing their written alphabet from China and by copying much of China's much older culture. For the last 90 years of Japan's extraordinarily swift plunge into the modern world, Japan just as carefully has copied the manners of the West, with a special debt to the industrial United States and to the sea-trading British. And now, for all of Nippon's lately pretended prejudice against the white world, Japan has found a new model to copy. It is Hitler's Germany. The authority for that statement is a high Japanese naval officer whose views were published today in a Tokyo newspaper. Though the copied characters in which the officer wrote ran up and down, his copied opinions all stride stiffly to the right, to the fascist right. The general outlook of the Japanese naval expert is optimistic. Manchukuo, the conquered chunks of China, Indochina, and Thailand, he prematurely boasts, have now all joined Japan's co-prosperity sphere. Then he adds, I quote, "Getting the Dutch East Indies oil and British Malay rubber is a bit more difficult, but it should be a cinch if we tackle it in the German fashion." What that means in Tokyo's mind is obvious. By copying Hitler's methods of moving quickly, of ignoring treaties, and of preferably attacking weak countries before going on to do battle with much stronger ones, the war-minded party in Japan is now openly convinced that it can stamp "Made in Japan" over a variety of product just as good as that now marked "Made in Germany." Japan's only hesitation, many observers think, is due only to Tokyo's habitual desire to see if the conquest of Asia can't be done more cheaply. The war communiques that have come in at the day's end direct from Moscow are again, rather suspiciously, say very little. There is a short story of an heroic land action carried out in northern Estonia by a group of sailors of the Red Navy who came ashore to join their soldier comrades. And the population of the German-occupied areas of Russia have been appealed to intensify their guerrilla warfare behind the lines. But except to say that battles are raging on four major fields, the Soviets tonight say little else. Now, for details of what our own government is doing, we bring you our News of the World reporter, Earl Godwin, who will speak from Washington.
The Senate extended the draftees' time to 2.5 years, as you know, but there's so much opposition, politics, and bitter feeling on the House side that tonight it's a horse race, to quote Democratic Whip Pat Boland of Pennsylvania. Looks like it would be decided by a margin of 5 votes. Representative Boland does the nose counting for the majority. The administration needs every Democratic vote it could get. 44 Democrats were against the bill at last count, 30 on the fence, and with 162 Republicans heavily against extension, the administration needs those boys on the fence. You'd hardly believe it, but many congressmen are sore because the president vetoed that $320 million road bill. Others sore because he wrote a sharp letter to Chairman Doughton, Ways and Means Committee, interfering, as they say, and suggesting separate returns for husband and wife in the income tax bill. It may seem petty and petulant in the face of vast troubles, but folks, I'm not arguing. I'm telling you that in opposing the extension of the draftees' time, many congressmen are simply playing old-time peevish and pork-barrel politics. That was indicated, too, when the old Rivers and Harbors bill had packed into it today the debatable Florida Ship Canal and the Tom Bigby River Dam as an offset for the St. Lawrence River Seaway, which is also in the bill. If the president wants that St. Lawrence Seaway, he may have to swallow a lot of projects he spurned heretofore. Many a congressman, sore because the road he promised his voters was vetoed, wants to know why his road is not just as good a defense project as that St. Lawrence Seaway that'll take 7 years. Meantime, the House stews over the draftees in camp. There will be heavy vote pulling. The heat will be turned on. In many cases, the price will be high. Roads, harbors, projects, and you will know all about it next week. While these trades surely add to the expense, Secretary of the Treasury Morgenthau is on the Senate side telling the Finance Committee of the Treasury will really need $5,600,000,000 next year in cash from taxes. Up to now, we've heard of only $3.5 billion. And the presidential mystery is still static. A dispatch from the yacht says the president worked on official papers all day, the first time he has been mentioned. That meeting with Churchill remains as something that may or may not have happened, and that's all from Washington at this time.
While we're waiting for John W. Vandercook to come in with a final bulletin, let's consider the case of the missing good disposition. I mean, tonight would be a good night to see a movie or visit with some friends or just take a little drive out in the country. But no, you're in no mood to do anything. You feel mean and miserable with a headache, and you don't care who knows it. So why don't you do this? Just relax in that easy chair and drink a glass of sparkling, refreshing Alka-Seltzer. That's what you need, Alka-Seltzer. Its analgesic, sodium acetyl salicylate, can give quick relief for your aching head because it is in complete solution and therefore ready to go to work the instant you take it. And because of certain valuable alkaline buffers, little or no effectiveness is lost and you get the most good out of its pain-relieving agents. So restore that missing good disposition now with Alka-Seltzer. Oh, yes, it can be done. And now, a final bulletin.
Vichy. Military experts in unoccupied France, who were once regarded as among the best in Europe, have today published their guesses on the much-discussed losses in the Russian campaign. Though the dispatch was passed by the German-supervised Vichy censors, the Frenchmen do not agree with the German figures. Vichy estimates the Russian casualties so far as around 2 million, half what the Nazis have said, and German losses at proportionately the higher figure of at least 1.5 million. Few prisoners, the French believe, are being taken on either side, and battle losses in Russia are still running as high as 70,000 men per day. And that's the News of the World. This is John W. Vandercook saying goodbye for Alka-Seltzer until this same time on Monday.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.